Hi, welcome back to Common Sense Care, Parenting Your Gender-Confused Child with Truth and Love. In the gender industry's one-size-fits-all program for people who struggle with their gender identity, they think that everyone should have the same treatment. But in no other area of education, childcare, or medicine or psychology is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan appropriate for every single person. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the treatment and the care and the support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And Maria, today we were scheduled to talk about siblings of children who have trans identities, but instead we're going to talk about your book. There's been a lot going on, even though it's only been released for 6 days. And I wanted to let our viewers know that we actually ended up releasing it early. So it was released about a week ago. And can you just tell us what's been going on since it was released?
Yeah, it's been quite a crazy week. So Partners for Ethical Care released this, DCIS, D-Trans, and Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult. Everybody, I'm sorry, this is an author's proof copy, so it's got this little band across here, but it says Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult. And it's a book for parents, caregivers, anyone who has a child or a family member who has gotten sucked into the gender cult. And I call it a cult because the more that I've researched, the more convinced I am that that's what it is. Yeah. We've never seen children presenting as gender confused like we do now. I mean, 5, 10, 20 years ago, here and there, once in a great while, you might have seen a child who really insisted they were the opposite sex. I just spoke to a retired teacher yesterday. She taught her whole career. She was a home ec teacher. And she said, in my entire teaching career, I had one child who struggled with I don't remember if it was his or her.
Well, and typically that was someone like me who had, you know, a profound sexual assault or some other issue in their life that had pushed them in that direction, not the outrageous numbers that we're seeing now.
Yeah. I mean, the last I checked, and this was a couple of months ago, I believe it was up to 2 million high school students in the United States are transgender identified now.
And it's just heartbreaking as I'm hearing, you know, from parents. Partners for Ethical Care has a chat line where we hear from parents in real time, and they will write in and they will say, my child just announced a trans identity and her best friend announced last week and their peer, you know, three other people in their peer group announced a month ago, I don't know what to do. So this is very, you know, symptomatic of a cult and a social contagion. And so I think calling it a cult is really appropriate. We need to know what we're dealing with. However, I think doing so really pushed the buttons of some people. And as a result, you've gotten pushback on your book much faster than I think any of us anticipated.
Well, I mean, I knew when we put it out, it was going to get pushback. It's on Amazon, as of this morning, it's had 23 reviews. 25 star reviews and 3 1 star reviews. That's all it's getting. It's getting 5 star reviews and 1 star reviews. It's very easy to look at that and go, oh, I know who the two groups are that are reviewing this. I was hopeful that it would stay up on Amazon longer than it did. Mm-hmm. But on, so 2 days ago, night before last, got a message from someone on Facebook who said, hey, I tried to review your book and I got this page not found on Amazon. And I said, oh, it has begun. And I looked and sure enough, Amazon had taken it down.
Which is really fast. It was less than a week.
Yeah, it was 6 days. We put it up on a Thursday evening or a Wednesday evening pretty late. And this was, I think, Tuesday evening when the following Tuesday when it was gone from Amazon. It was still listed several other places. We initially listed it with Lulu and on Smashwords. Lulu in print, Smashwords in digital, and Amazon. We're looking to get it on our Partners for Ethical Care website, but we don't have that quite up yet because we anticipated Amazon's going to take it down. And sure enough, it got a couple of one-star reviews from what I have to assume are trans rights activists, and it got taken down. No word from Amazon, not an email, you know, nothing. It was just gone. So I got up the next morning, had an email from Amazon, in the Partners for Ethical Care account, and it said your book has been removed because you have violated our content guidelines, and your account has been suspended with Amazon for violating content guidelines. So the guidance in the email was, read our content guidelines, check here that you agree with them, and then remove the book that offends. And they said we had repeatedly listed books that break their content guidelines. I don't know how we repeatedly did
it. Well, this is actually an interesting claim of Amazon and directive, because basically what they're saying is that Partners for Ethical Care has decided to start publishing books in this realm. So what they're saying is, if one book violates what they're calling their content guidelines, they will not allow any books that Partners for Ethical Care has decided to publish until that offending book has been removed by the publisher. So that's an interesting kind of nuance to how they're running their business, really crippling groups like our Partners for Ethical Care that are trying to get information out there to the public.
I also published books I was a novelist before I got involved in this area, and I have a number of novels at Amazon under my own personal account. I wondered if they would also disable my personal account because the same name is on all the books. They did not. My personal account has been fine so far. But I wondered, how far would they go with
right. Stolen things. Well, and I also think it's very clear here that the activists took down your book, because I've had a book called The Fallacy of Affirmation, in which I talk about many of the same things that you talk about in your book, and it hasn't been taken down. And part of it is I haven't promoted it. You know, it's not well known out there. And so it hasn't gotten the negative publicity that yours has gotten. And so, activists haven't targeted yet. And so this is where it's concerning that Amazon is being responsive to people who are actively trying to get books censored. And yet they have content up there that is so profoundly offensive, that is so disturbing, that it's shocking to me that it's allowed to be published at all, let alone that Amazon is willing to have it on their website. They have, I believe, a coloring book of grown-up body parts for little children. They have sex stories about incest and child sex abuse. They sell sex dolls. I mean, these are, things that are sexualizing children in a way that is just, it's really disturbing. And yet they're saying that a parent's guide to help them so that their child isn't medicalized for life is a violation of their guidelines.
Well, yeah, after we got the book banned, after Amazon banned the book, and then we got that email the next morning telling us we had violated content guidelines, we put out some information on social media, and some of our supporters started to call into Amazon and say, hey, what's going on? I emailed Amazon. I just said, I've read through your content guidelines, and I don't see where our book violates any of them. Could you please tell me specifically where it violates? But one reader sent us a screenshot of her conversation with Amazon. And she said, the person I talked to called DCIS, D-Trans, and Detox offensive. Mm-hmm. And that was when I said, all right, they're going to call this offensive. Let's go see what else they sell. And you're right. They sell some pretty offensive stuff. I mean, they sell Mein Kampf by Hitler.
Right.
And I'm not opposed to that. It's historical, we need to learn from history, mm-hmm. but it's there.
Yeah. And determines what's offensive and what isn't, because they're also selling a lot of, pro-trans material that I personally find very offensive. So who determines what's offensive and what's not? And I think something that's kind of exciting that came out of this is that a lot of people were very upset about Amazon. And I believe a lot of our supporters contacted Amazon. And we had a lot of our supporters who said, I'm going to call them or I'm going to email them. And I think we had an outpouring of support for your book, Maria, because what happened next?
I was so overwhelmed by the outpouring. So many people wrote and were so angry. And I'm not arrogant enough to think that, oh, the book was just that good. But I think people are really tired of this. Yeah. I think they're really tired of Amazon deciding what's okay for other people to read and what's not okay, and taking a very biased stance on this issue of transgender ideology, which is in no way decided in the medical literature. So then we're pursuing the, you know, what is the content violation here? And I'm hearing from people that they're calling Amazon, they're writing in. And then midday, Partners for Ethical Care got another email from Amazon, and it was very odd. It said, oh, we're looking at your account, and we realize there, I forget how they phrased it, but something was wrong in the boxes that we had ticked in our territories. Like when you put a book up, you have to choose, are you just selling it on Amazon.com US? Are you selling it in Europe? Are you selling it in Asia? And you have to tick all these territory boxes. And I had done that. I'd said, yeah, we'll sell it everywhere. But this email said, oh, there's a problem with that, which is why your account has been suspended until we can fix that. Well, that's quite odd. So at that point, I go back to the book details, the publishing details, and I'm sorting through it. And while I'm trying to figure this out, we get another email from Amazon apologizing for suppressing. That was their word. We suppressed your book in error. It was a mistake. We apologize. It is now back up. Sure enough, it's back. The paperback version is not online yet. When you publish a paperback with Amazon, it can take up to 72 hours because they're doing an auto vetting process where they look at, is it paginated correctly? Is the cover on correct? All that. So we're still waiting for the paperback to come back, but the digital book is back up and supposedly all restrictions have been pulled off the account. So that was thrilling. We were very happy to see that.
But which is interesting, because then if they come back and ban it again, they're going to have a hard time justifying it, because they, but it is indicative of what is happening and how strong the trans right activists lobby is and how easily they can push back on people when they don't like what they're saying. And it's really interesting. This happened during the legislative session, and something else that I saw that sort of just kind of played into this is there was a small group of trans activists who had a rally at the Capitol in Texas in opposition of some legislation that was there. And boy, was the media there to cover it. It was, newspapers, radio programs. It looked like, all the media outlets were there to cover it. You know, I don't know who all was there, but it definitely was getting coverage. Whereas anytime, people who have been protesting what the activists are doing gather and demonstrate, we don't get the media coverage. And so again, it's just this a demonstration of how skewed things are, and how this group that keeps claiming to be bullied, that keeps claiming to be marginalized and underrepresented, they are the ones that have the voice. They are the ones that have access to the media. They are the ones who are able to suppress voices that they don't like. And so again, it's this very disingenuous argument that they're marginalized and bullied when they're the ones who are able to get books blocked. And I honestly believed if we did not have the outpouring of support for your book that we had, we also have some very influential people who emailed us on the side and said that they got in touch with contacts within Amazon that they have personally to help get us your book back up. I don't think it would be back up.
I think we owe our supporters a great deal of thanks. Yes, yeah. I was so pleased about that. But I think what you're talking about is true. There's that saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Right. And the trans rights activists have been very squeaky wheels for a very long time. When we posted on social media last night about the book coming back up, a number of people said, I think the tide is turning. I think we're reaching a critical mass.
Well, I hope
so. And I see that. I see more and more people waking up to what's going on, whether it's just what's going on in the trans rights movement or what's going on with censorship and the media.
Right.
One of the things that, you know this, that Partners for Ethical Care is often criticized, we're called a conservative organization. We are not. We've got people across the political spectrum, across the theological spectrum. We've got a very wide group of people. But the reason that is said about us is because it tends to be the conservative media that covers this. Those are the only organizations so far who are willing to honestly look at this. What happened with the book was not a big surprise to me. That it got put back up within 24 hours was a huge surprise. So yeah. Thank you to everyone who helped with that.
And I want to, again, emphasize that this is a parenting book. You know, this is not some kind of radical, ideological driven book. This is a book for parents who do not want their children medicalized for life. It's not anything radical.
When I talk to people who have read it, I'm like, this is just common sense. Like, this is Ed Seitz, Educational Psychology 101.
Yeah.
It's basic principles of parenting, principles of communication, relationship principles. It's all stuff that's been out there for decades and understood as, this is how you parent well. This is how you communicate well. This is how you draw people closer in relationship. I'd say only about half the book really relates to dealing with the trans agenda and the cult aspect of it. Much of the book is just basic. Here's some parenting principles.
Right. Yeah, good principles. And again, these are for parents who are struggling, because these kids who are trans identified have some issues. They're struggling with difficulties. And more I'm convinced that it's because they're being told that they're not capable of handling very basic life changes like adolescence. You know, for whatever reason, activists are trying to convince kids that they're too fragile to handle even, you know, basic things like puberty, which is just terribly unfortunate. And the cult aspect, again, I want to come back to that, because I was just listening to some testimony again in Texas, and it was fascinating, because it was by a doctor who used to, I believe he said he was the director of the American Psychiatric Association in Texas. And he said the only other time he's seen children emboldened in this way, where adults are believing the fantastical and just quite frankly bizarre stories of children that they're born in the wrong body. It was during the, I believe it was like late 1980s, early 1990s, and it was the McMillan daycare, where children were coming out with these crazy stories of being abducted, taken to graveyards, being forced to eat dead bodies, being taken away in hot air balloons, that it was this huge satanic torture and just like the fantastical stories these children were telling the therapists, and the therapists were told to believe everything that the child told them. And these children were just, it's almost like they were affirmed and encouraged and celebrated. Like the more crazy the story, the more fantastical the story, the more the child was like affirmed and celebrated. And the stories just kept getting bigger and crazier, you know, tunnels I mean, you can go back and research it. And I actually remember this. It had a profound effect on me, because I remember the news stories, and I was actually terrified of putting my child in daycare, because I was watching this and I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck is going on here? Because it all was being treated as if this actually had happened to these children. And then it was, you know, learned later that this was all just completely made up, that, you know, this huge, huge number of people were actually put into prison as a result of these stories these children made up. And it was, you know, when they finally investigated it, it turned out that, you know, these children made it up, because guess what? Children make up stories. And especially when they're when they're encouraged and when they're prompted and when they're celebrated by adults, they are especially inclined to do this. And this therapist was actually making a lot of connections between the children who were caught up in this situation and what's happening now, because it's so similar. And when I saw parents bringing in their children to testify, it was the same thing. These children were clearly, they weren't coming up with it on their own. These were children who were being prompted, who were being celebrated, who were being affirmed and encouraged, and getting, you know, a lot of strokes is what I always talked about. You know, kids need this encouragement. And so again, we need to counter this, because we know that children will run with ideas. If you give them a kernel of an idea and tell them, you know, this is going to solve all of your problems. This is what's wrong. This is what's going to solve all of your problems. Boy, kids are just going to run with those ideas.
And we know that people respond to things that motivate them. We know that people respond to affirmation. They respond to kids believe what you tell them about themselves. If you tell a child you're brilliant, the child's going to think I'm brilliant. If you tell the child you're stupid, you know, they're going to internalize that. And so I think that's one of the most insidious parts of this ideology, is we're affirming kids. We're just solidifying them in this thing that we've taught them, and we're celebrating it and making and reinforcing it. It's just a self-reinforcing disorder.
I don't know if you remember, there was a study that took place. It was as a school teacher, and they, you know, this was kind of something that doesn't take place anymore now, but the school teacher decided to tell all the kids with blue eyes, and the kids with blue eyes were special, they were smart, and the kids with the brown eyes not so much. And she did this experiment to see what would happen, and sure enough, the kids with blue eyes ended up doing better in school, they had better relationships, they thrived, and the kids with brown eyes did not. You know, we know that kids respond profoundly to the messages that they're given. And boy, if a parent is telling a kid that they're born in the wrong body, or if a child is acting in a way that a parent is kind of not responding to well, say perhaps a parent has an effeminate boy, and that parent is kind of uncomfortable with that effeminate boy, but that effeminate boy suddenly says, I'm a girl, and oh, you're a girl, and suddenly then it's okay. Boy, it totally makes sense why that child would glom onto that identity. And so I think, it's so important for people to really have the language to talk about this. And that's something that I think your book does so well, is it gives parents the language to talk about this in a way that's honest and in a way that's challenging the whole affirmative care model that the trans activists are pushing.
Well, when this happens to a parent, when a child suddenly comes and says, hey, I'm transgender, I'm non-binary, it can just be so out of the blue. And the parent may have absolutely no idea what trans ideology is about. We didn't, in my generation, we didn't grow up with this, but this generation of kids are being spoon-fed this in school every day. And so, yeah, parents just are completely flummoxed. Where did this come from? And so part of what I try to address in the book is asking child questions. The child thinks that they are much more well-informed than you are, and that's actually probably accurate. Now, much of what they know is deceptive and wrong and not truthful, but they still have more information than you do. And so knowing how to ask the right questions, and specifically asking questions that are going to challenge the logic, but not in a combative way. Nobody likes to, you know, have somebody come at them and say, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Are you stupid? But just to say, wow, I'm completely unfamiliar with this. Can you explain to me, like, okay, is gender fixed or is it fluid? Mm-hmm. That question stabs surgically at the heart of this, because neither answer is correct. And when you start really asking questions around that, you start forcing your child to really think about what they've been told.
Right.
And over time, as you work on your relationship, as you try to draw that child back into alignment with the family and challenge the logic of what the trans ideology ideologues are telling them, they start to wake up. They do start to wake up.
Yeah. And I think that just having that information so that you know that there are parents out there who are going to be telling your child that they're special, that you know, if your parents don't affirm you, that they are hateful. That's information parents really need to know. So I'm so grateful that your book is out there. And we don't know where your book is going to be available. You know, when someone's watching this, it's possible, you know, it's going to be up and available everywhere, but it's possible that it won't be. And so I just want to make sure that we will update the description below this video to let people know where it's available. Or you can always come to Partners for Ethical Care website and we will have updates on where it's available. Again, it just is astonishing to me that this is a parenting magazine or a parenting book and that we have to be worried about whether or not people can access it. And it's so interesting to me, again, you know, as someone who has always been on the left, you know, I grew up with the messages that, you know, censorship is wrong, that book burning is wrong, that that we need to have information freely accessible. And yet it seems to be turned on its head now. That they're saying, you know, there's certain kinds of information that we actually do want to censor. And there are books that we do want to burn, such as, you know, Harry Potter books that I've seen people having book burning celebrations. And it's so interesting to me how this ideology is capturing people in a way, you know, again, very cultish, because it's taking people who normally would not believe in censorship, who would normally not believe in book burning, who would normally not believe in medicating children, who would normally not believe it's a good idea to induce developmental delays in children, and co-opting those ideas into this ideology to the point where they actually believe that those are okay things to do. And that's the hallmark of a cult, is getting people to do things that they normally wouldn't believe are okay to do.
Yeah, very much so. There's been a very strategic marketing of this. We know, you know, there's a lot of money behind this. Jennifer Billick, if you're not familiar with her, the 11th Hour blog, she's done amazing work looking into the roots of this, where it came from, how it's come to the public consciousness as it is. It's been very strategically marketed to us. And one of the other hallmarks of a cult is they introduce thought-stopping techniques to keep people who are in the cult from thinking about what the cult is doing. And some of those thought-stopping techniques involve sloganeering. Mm-hmm. And you hear this all the time, and I hear this all the time. I'll ask a question like I did earlier. Well, is gender fixed or is it fluid? And what I hear is, you're a TERF.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing a name at somebody, attacking their character, avoids answering the question. These are these epithets and these slogans, like trans women are women. I've seen that on social media so many times from my own friends and family. I'll say, look, I have real concerns about children taking puberty blockers. And the person will respond with, trans women are women. What does that even mean? What that means is they've been sucked into the cult. That's a thought-stopping technique. It's something that's provided in order to keep them from thinking. Now, thought-stopping techniques are not necessarily bad. Thought-stopping techniques can be used in cognitive behavioral therapy for people who suffered trauma, for people who maybe have PTSD, and they start going into a cycle of a negative, destructive thought pattern. They can introduce a thought-stopping technique. Like, when you start seeing that thought pattern happen, I want you to say, can you help me with anything? What are some thoughts?
Well, one of the things that I actually, when I start, I would say 99% of the time, I don't think about feeling like I want to be a boy. But occasionally I still think, gosh, I wish I could be a man, you know, and so the thought stopping technique that I tend to use is that's not going to solve your problems. Yeah. Not going to solve your problems. So whenever I go down that road and think, you know, I hate being a woman or, you know, whatever, that's not going to solve your problems is my default stop thought stopping technique.
That's a positive, helpful, healthy thought stopping technique because you're stopping a negative, damaging thought.
Right.
But cults have co-opted that technique and applied it to anytime something gets questioned about our ideology, you apply a thought stopping technique to it so that you don't think about how wrong this is. And we see that everywhere in the culture. When somebody will not or cannot answer a question, that indicates a problem on their part, not on my part.
Right. Because I could very easily, explore that. If somebody wanted to challenge me and say, well, are you a man? I can easily, you know, discuss that and say, you know, explain to them why I'm stopping my thought. Because like you said, it's a healthy technique that I'm using to make my life more functional. Whereas in the case of cults, and then specifically in the case of trans activists, they're using it to stop all conversations about this so that we are not allowed to challenge them. And it's actually very bullying. And what it does is it prevents us from exploring really powerful concerns that we have and reasonable concerns. And again, it comes back to the fundamental issue here is that if children go down this road, we have a path of accepting themselves for who they are, or we have a path of medicalization, which is going to harm their body. It's going to be expensive, and it's going to result in a lifelong side effects and medicalization. So, you know, when I weigh those just from a purely logical perspective, of course, it's going to be better for a child not to go down this route. Of course, it's going to be better for a child to accept themselves for who they are. And then you get into all the nuances of it. Of course, it's better not to affirm a child that they're inherently flawed. Of course, it's better to find out what's causing those feelings that there's something wrong with that child. And there's all those underlying issues that cause a child to believe or to feel like there's something wrong with them.
We should be able to discuss those things.
Yeah, of course.
And I started out working on this in my school district. The launching point for me was really when I found out our district was putting into place a transgender students policy. And I read through that policy and there was a lot that was dangerous in that. And so I got involved at the school level, going to school board meetings. And there's a group of trans rights activists, many of whom are parents in my community, who very angry with me. And I consistently would ask them, especially these moms, I'm like, can I take you out for coffee?
Yeah.
I mean, this affects all of us. Can we just sit down? I'll treat you to coffee. They will not go to coffee with me. And I have spent so much time pouring over, like, I don't think I'm a scary person. I don't think I'm a mean person. Mm. I thought that they wouldn't sit down for coffee with me because if they entertained the thought that maybe I was right about anything, then they would have to entertain the thought that they're culpable for their own children's destruction.
Yeah.
There is that on a certain level. But as I started studying cults and realizing what cults are doing, I really realized it's far more malicious than that. Another thing that cults do is called milieu control. Milieu is your place or your situation. And traditionally, cults will get people on a compound. And they don't want to let people leave the compounds, or if they do, they need to be accompanied. Mm-hmm. They're trying to control what you hear, who you talk to, you know, what your access to information is. This cult doesn't need to have a compound because it's everywhere. It's on social media. It's in the schools. It's in entertainment. It's in the movies, on the radio. I mean, you start looking for it, it's everywhere. They have controlled the milieu. Mm-hmm. But these moms, I'm sure that they have been told not to sit down and have coffee with me.
Right.
Because I will introduce an opposition to the accepted doctrine of trans ideology.
Which again is another indication that this is not a marginalized group. These are not people who are bullied. These are the ones who are in control. We are fighting against something that is incredibly insidious, and we need to keep fighting. And I hope that, I mean, on some level, I hope that your book sales kind of, you know, level off. I hope that people don't need it. But I also hope that every family that does need it is able to access it, because it's so important for them to have this resource. And you mentioned as you started writing this that you had hoped that there were other resources available to parents. And one of the reasons that you wrote this is because as parents started to reach out to Partners for Ethical Care and ask, you know, what can I do? We have found there really aren't resources. There really isn't anything to point them to. So you wanted to provide them with something. And this is really it. There really isn't much out there. And so we're hoping that we can get this in the hands of families who need it so that they can... Go ahead.
I've been asking ever since really getting involved in this, I've been asking people in the community that are working, we call it the gender critical community, people who are not sold on the affirmation only. And I've been asking, who's writing guidance for parents? Who is supporting parents? There are therapists out there who are providing good, adequate, healthy therapy, but they have to do it under the radar because they're being silenced. They're having their careers canceled. Where are the resources for parents who want to go a different way? People are writing a lot of stuff. Abigail Schreier wrote a fantastic book, Irreversible Damage, the Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. That's awesome. Really talks about how this has taken over the culture. Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, you know, about all of where this came from, out of different waves of feminism, out of Marxism. Amazing scholarly books, but nobody had written something for parents. And so I felt like I had to try, you know, I had to try to do something, because we keep having the same conversations with parents who call us. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Mm-hmm. So that's where this book came from. And it does, every time it sells, you know, as an author, you want it sales, like, oh, I've got good sales. But with this book, it's really a mixed bag, because every time someone buys this book, I think, oh, that's another family that's suffering with this.
One of the things that I wanted to note is that you're not doing this to make a lot of money, that all of the profits for this book are being donated to Partners for Ethical Care, so that Partners for Ethical Care can continue to do the work of reaching out and doing everything we can to stop what's happening to children.
I'm so grateful that Partners for Ethical Care was willing to publish it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to personally profit off this book. It comes at the cost of a lot of pain, and I don't want to profit off that. So I'm really grateful that Partners for Ethical Care was willing to publish it. And yep, it all goes straight to Partners for Ethical Care's work to try to save children from this insidious ideology.
Well, thank you so much, Maria. I just, I'm so grateful for this work. I'm grateful for the book. I'm curious to see where it ends up. I'm hoping that Amazon will keep it accessible to people, but if not, we'll keep updating the website, let people know where they can access it. If worse comes to worse, you know, we can send it out to people. if need be, we can order a bunch of copies and send it out to people who need it.
Well, thank you, Erin. I mean, this book, it has my name on it, but it's got input from so many wise people, you included. So much of what you've taught me, what I've learned at PEC, at Arlington Parents Coalition. I mean, so many people have spoken into this book. And because of privacy protection reasons, I couldn't name so many people that I wish I could name. But this has really been a community labor of love. And so thank you for all that you've done teaching me and helping me to learn about this this issue.
And that's just another thing. I know that I don't want to, you know, hammer this too hard, but again, initially you were going to post, print the names of all those who had sort of helped contribute to your book until you realized that that would actually be sort of a hit list for trans activists. And so you just posted, you just printed the initials of all those who had helped with your book, because you didn't want to put those people in danger of being targeted. And again, this is another example of who is the bully here, and the fact that, you know, people do have concerns about being, even having their name listed as being somebody who contributed or somebody who is being thanked in a book like yours. And so again, we need to really stand up and say enough of this. These are not people who are being bullied. These are people who are actively bullying others.
Yeah, when I was putting together the acknowledgement section of the book, I reached out to everybody who I wanted to acknowledge. And I would guess maybe 20% of them said they didn't want their name in the book at all. They thanked me, but they said, I don't want anything. A few said using their initials would be fine. But as we got closer to going to press, I thought about it and I'm like, I don't feel good about putting anybody's name out there because people do get targeted. Just maliciously, even though some of these people are just like my cousins who have nothing to do with this issue. But it's too dangerous. And people need to realize that it's dangerous to do what we're doing.
Well, thank you for all your work, Maria. And we'll next week, we'll go back to our regular Common Sense Care videos where we'll talk about siblings of trans identified kids and how parents can help them.
Thanks so much, Erin. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Maria.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you